Okay.
Good morning. So thanks for coming in at this sub-zero temperature. This is one of those, it's -1 degree this morning when I left the house. And, you know, for those of you who listen to recording from California, you know, this is why you're paying higher mortgage. Okay. So we're going to welcome to lecture 6. And we're going to actually take you through the memory example, and you know we're going to talk through a few things when you craft CUDA code using these tiling algorithms. Okay, and then you know we're going to see if we can build some intuition, but all of you will be will find the coding for using CUDA memory very intuitive at some point. So this is a review slide where we slide 2 where we talk about the basic concept. So, you know what, just kind of a quick review. When we do the matrix multiplication, you know, every element of P is in the product of, you know what, 2 vectors, one row of M and one column of N. And so what we're looking at is we're going to actually tile the input array so that we can, you know what, at every phase of the program execution, we're going to bring in just one small tile of the input N and small tile of the input N as far as a group of threads are concerned. So going into the details here, if you look at the production, okay, if you look at the production of PD00, it's going to, you know, if we take a very, very small example and say, how about if we just do a 4x4 matrix multiplication? And then we're going to see that, you know, the NP element 0, 0 is going to be used twice. And once to produce PD 0, 0, and once to produce PD 1, 0, right? And so, you know, when we do the multiplication, we're going to have one thread to produce the PD00 and the other thread, another thread to produce PD10. And so the idea is that since we're going to be using, you know, MD00 2 times, wouldn't it be a good idea if we somehow fetch this element once, and then we can just, you know, put it on a fast access on-chip memory and use it twice, right? In this small example, we will save one trip to the main memory. Yes, Wally?
I tried listening to one of the lectures which I missed.
Yeah.
And the voice was kind of sometimes
good, yes,
sometimes not. So I'm just,
yes,
if you would please try to reduce this.
Yes. In fact, I think it's getting better in the later lectures. I noticed the same problem. Thanks, Wally. So what we're going to, so the interesting challenge here is that, remember, PD00 and PD10 are being produced by 2 different threads, right? And these threads, depending on whether they're in the same warp or not in the same warp, they may have, you know, synchronous execution behavior or asynchronous execution behavior. So let's say, let's assume that PD00 and PD10 are in the same warp. So in this case, the execution of PD00 and 10 are going to be synchronized, right? They're going, remember, those threads in a warp are going to be executing, you know, all together, and then they're going to move, you know, move forward all together. So if we loaded MD00 on a on-chip memory, we know that these 2 threads will be actually executing, will be able to consume MD00 at exactly the same time, which is a good thing, okay? That means that we have a good control over how the memory data that we fetched and try to reuse will be actually consumed by these 2 threads. However, if you look on the vertical way, let's say PD00 and PD01, we're showing a very, very small example here. It's a 4x4 matrix. But if we have a large matrix, Then it was the threads that are going to be producing PD00 versus the thread that is going to produce PD00 and PD versus the thread of PD01 will belong in different warps. So during execution, you know what, there's no way for us to really tell if PD00 and PD01 will be produced at the same time, or they may be very, very far away in time. So when we fetch, when we try to save the memory access of ND00, then when we fetch that ND00 onto memory, we may not be able to have a good control over timing so that PD00 and PD01 will be able to consume ND00 somewhere close in time, that we don't need to keep that data element on the memory chip for a long, long time. So this is a classic problem of caching or any kind of on-chip memory management. In the CPU world, when we try to reuse data, usually this is automatically cached. But the fact that these threads could execute a long, long time away from each other also make it very difficult to manage caching. Okay, and there's no magic here. And for shared memory usage, it's also the same way. If we loaded ND00 onto a shared memory location, we need to make sure that everyone who needs to access that data will be able to consume it before we let the data out go. So you know what? This is the fundamental reason why, before we move on, I want to make sure everyone understands. Whenever we try to load a piece of input data on chip, and then try to have multiple threads to consume that piece of data, we need to make sure that we have some way of controlling the execution timing of these threads so that they will be able to have a bounded window of consumption of data, right? And beyond that window, we know that all the threads have completed their consumption, and therefore we can move on, okay? And this is the fundamental, concept of locality. This is the fundamental concept of how any of these on-chip memories can work, okay? It almost doesn't matter which kind of chip you use. Any questions before we go into more specifics? Okay, so now let's draw that picture. Let's look a little bit deeper into this picture. So on slide 4, we're showing the production of all the four, all the four thread elements, P00, P10, P01, P11. And this corresponds to that upper left corner, okay? Upper left corner of the previous picture. Now, when I produce P00, I'm going to execute this dot product loop, and at every iteration I'm going to get a pair of elements. I'm going to add the pair into that cumulative sum. So if I look through the execution of P00 and the production of P00 and P10, what I'm seeing is that every time I fetch, let's say, N10, I'm going to use it twice, right? Once by each thread, and same thing as M00, same thing as M20, and same as N30. So this tells me that I need to have two things in order to save memory bandwidth. One is, I need to have a way for me to just fetch the data into some kind of on-chip memory. And the other one is the on-chip memory better be accessible by multiple threads. So that's why it has to be a shared memory across these threads, right? So this is a kind of an easy case. And then I will have another situation where I have P10 and P11. And if you look at access patterns, the P10 is going to act, consume N10, and P11 is going to consume N10 also. So if I can somehow make sure that the execution of, P10 and P11 are also somewhat synchronized, Then I can fetch N10 once and consume it twice. And you need to be able to take from, go from these small examples to and scale it to much bigger pictures. So instead of having just two elements, I'm showing you essentially a square of the previous picture with two elements on each side, but you need to be able to scale this kind of picture to 8x8 or 16x16 or even even bigger, so that you can conceptualize these axes. So when we do this, we say, okay, if we chop up, if we somehow make sure that we can always maintain the execution in such a way that we can guarantee that both P00 and P10 can always consume N00, M10, M20, M30 at a reasonably controlled time execution timing, then we can use a small on-chip memory to save the memory bandwidth. So this is this is exactly the reason why we're going to we're going to use this tile approach, where we're going to chop up the M and the N also into these little tiles. So before this, remember we actually chop up the P, the production of P into tiles, because we wanted to be able to use threads and thread blocks, right? So now we're chopping up M and N's in order to be able to use the on-chip shared memory. Okay? So we will break up the inner product loop of each thread into phases. So instead of having every thread to go from the zeroth element all the way to the nth element or width element in each inner product, we break that loop into phases. Okay? We just break those loops into smaller phases. And at the beginning of each phase, we will load the MD and ND elements, okay, of a small tile, okay, so that during the phase, that everyone, that everyone will need during the phase of the shared access. So when we do the first phase, we will load up the first tile, and then so that the phase during the phase, we will just each thread in this case will just consume two of the M elements or two of the N elements. Okay. And you're going to have all the four threads to consume two out of the four elements, right, in each case. So PD00 will be consuming MD00 and MD10, right? But PD01 will be consuming MD01 and MD11. So you have these sort of, for every element, you're going to be consuming two of the MDs and the two of the NDs, right? And so the point is, after you loaded that tile, then you go into the actual execution phase. And through this phase, the two elements will be consumed out of the shared memory rather than going out to the global memory. And that's where, you start to have the savings. So let's kind of talk through this, a little bit carefully. This is one of those pictures that I always wanted to simplify, but I have not been able to simplify to the level that that both David and I would like to see. So let's look at the execution timing of phases in that little example. So remember, the P elements are produced by the threads, right? So in this picture, we change the P0 into T00, P10 into T10, and so on. And this is just to give you a feeling of how the threads are working through the working through the time. So at phase one on the left hand side, we're going to have every thread to load one of the M elements, and then every thread to load one of the N elements. Okay, So this is the reason why we use exactly the tile, the same tile size for M and S, the same as the P tiles. Because it's a very simple organization where we know that we will have enough threads, okay? Then each thread will be able to just load one MD and one ND. Even though this MD00 is loaded by thread 00, but we know that it's going to be used by these other threads, okay? Yet at least another thread, which is which is going to be used later here. So if you look at MD01, it's only going to be loaded once by T01, but it's going to be consumed by T01 as well as T11, okay? And you should be able to convince yourself that every element is loaded once, but used twice. And you should be able to generalize this, right? If you have a tile organization of, let's say, 4x4, then every element should be loaded, what, how many times? Still once, right? But use how many times? Four times, right? And if you have an 8x8, still loaded once, but use eight times. So this becomes a knob, okay? This becomes a knob, where if you use increasingly bigger tile size, you actually cut down you start to have a bigger, what we call the reuse ratio, okay? You will be using each loaded element more and more times, and therefore you save more and more of your memory bandwidth, right? So, you know, same thing with N elements. If you load ND101s, it will be consumed by T10 as well as T11. And you know what? This is kind of a quick review of the thread model here. Remember, the threads are going to be cut into these, be organized into these warps, right? And you know what? In reality, what happens is that all the warps, all the threads that have consecutive x indices are going to be, form those warps. So we know that T00 and T10 are going to be in a warp. However, if you have a larger tiling size, T00 and T01 may not be in the same warp. So when we have a reuse across threads in different warps, we're not going to be able to control the execution timing in general without a barrier synchronization. So now, let's go back to the concept of barrier synchronization. Remember, barrier synchronization is where is a primitive function call sync threads, right? And when you put that sync thread call in the code, in the kernel code, all the threads in a thread block, right? All the threads in the thread block will have to reach that synchronization point. And then everyone will leave that point all at the same time, right? So, even though these threads, T10 and T11, may not be in the same warp, but if you execute a sync thread, they will be guaranteed to all be waiting for each other at the barrier synchronization point before they all move on, right? So that's how you can make sure that the ND10 that gets loaded into the shared memory will truly be consumed by both parties in this case before the entire thread block will move on, right? And if you have a larger tile size, then you can also guarantee that all the four that will be sharing the same element, or the eight will be sharing the same element, and so on, they will all be synchronized. So if you look at the barrier synchronization, this is a pattern where people use the barrier synchronization for. It's not necessarily used for barrier synchronization of the program data per se, but it's a barrier synchronization that makes sure that when you fetch a piece of data into the on-chip memory, and there's multiple threads that are supposed to be able to consume that data from on-chip memory, you use barrier synchronization to make sure that everyone has done so before you move on. Okay. So the table here is meant for you to have a very clear picture of how each piece of data will be shared across multiple threads, and you should be able to picture for a larger dimension of tiles how this sharing actually works. And so the third column here shows how the data is going to be accessed out of the shared memory. So if you look at the first two columns, we show that for each MD element and ND element, you can load them into a 2x2 shared memory, and then every data element in that in the case are directly mapped. So 00 goes to 0001, and then 10 goes to 10. 10 goes to 10, and 01 goes to 01, and 11 goes to 11. So for that first phase, everything is very, very straightforward. Okay, you take the upper left corner of MD and ND, and then you put that into the shared memory, and it's just a direct mapping of all the indices. However, when you move on to phase two, you're going to take MD20, 30, and ND02, and ND03, and so on. So we're moving to a different corner, right? We're moving into a different corner of those, of the input data structure. However, we're still going to load them into the MDS, the shared memory 00011011, right? Because the shared memory is much, much smaller. So you're not just taking another corner of the input, another pile of the input array, and then load them into exactly the same shared memory locations. So this is why you can get away with such a small shared memory, right? Every time you bring a tile of your input data, you reuse that original shared memory. And why can you reuse it? Because whoever needs to consume the previous data in that shared memory all have what? Completed with your barrier synchronization. Okay. So you can imagine that there will be other threads, and they will have these other faces. So one of the homeworks for you is when you go home, you should be able to to complete this diagram for the 4x4 matrix multiplication, right? And then get a really good intuition about how the data actually gets reused across the threads when you produce all the P elements. Okay. Yes.
Now talking about the sync thread calls, we would need two sync threads per phase, correct?
Ah, very good question. The question is, how many sync threads do you have? When you synchronize. So that leads right into the next slide. Okay. Well, I was hoping that someone would ask. Yes, Wally.
Is it not done manually? Using the same shared memory location. It's not done manually, is it? It's not done manually. I mean, the program is not gonna do this.
Oh, it is done by hand. It's done explicitly.
Oh.
Okay. That's the next slide. So both of you just asked a question that lead into this slide. Okay. So having thought through this, you have a mental picture of what you want to accomplish. So now let me take you through the code and see how you physically implement it in CUDA, right? So I'm showing the matrix multiplication kernel again. Okay, so it would be actually a good idea for you to go back to the original original matrix multiplication kernel that used multiple blocks, and just to get a to refresh your memory about the kernel. Now, I'm going to talk about how to convert that kernel into a new kernel that uses the shared memory, okay, and uses the tiling of MD and ND, okay, so that you can actually get much better performance. If you look at the top, You know, we're declaring shared, you know, two matrices to be in the shared memory. So we have underscore, underscore, shared, underscore, underscore. And remember, you can optionally use what? Underscore, underscore, device, underscore, underscore, in front of this. It will give you exactly the same effect, okay? So, you know, we're seeing two declarations. One shared memory array for MDS, and one shared memory array for NDS. And we're going to declare these two data structures of size of tile width times tile width, okay?
So, you know, for a 2x2, it will be, the tile width will be 2, right? And for 4x4, it will be 4, and so on.
So, you know what, this shared memory will be relatively small compared to the, you know, to the global memory data structures, compared to MD and ND. So, you know what, we're going to actually have to do a lot of these thread index calculations. So, you know what, just to make things a little bit simpler, we assign block ID dot X into BX and BY and so on, and TX and TY. There are two effects here. Block ID dot X is actually a built-in variable. Okay, it's actually a hardware register that you know, at runtime that you can actually access and get your thread ID. So it's not hardware anymore.
Well, no. What happens is the thread IDX, one of your local registers is initialized with your thread IDX value. So if you never use it, you can reuse that register for other things. But
interesting.
So one of your register usage, in your register usage quota, is included your thread IDX.
What if you write into it? Can you write into your IDX?
Oh, yes.
And you change it.
If you ever use, so if you write into that register some other value, it's no longer thread IDX.
Thread ID.
Interesting. A register gets initialized with your thread IDX value, and if it's ever overwritten, then you don't have use of thread IDX anymore. So the compiler just takes care of that for you.
I see. But. Good. Okay. Interesting. See, I learned things in this class too. So, you know, let's go into the calculation of the row and column again, right? So, you know what, the calculation of row and column are exactly the same as the previous column, kernel, except that we just simplify the expression with BY and TY, BX, BY, and TX, TY. So, you know what, the row and the column variable still gives you the row of the MD and the row of the ND that you're going to be, you know what, using to calculate the row and column of the PD element. Okay, so it still gives you the same thing. Now, what's different is once you get into the inner product loop, okay, you're no longer going to have a very simple loop that just goes through all the, you know, all the elements of M and all the elements of N to produce that inner product. But rather, you're going to break up the inner product loop into a doubly nested loop, okay? And for the innermost loop, you're going to be just going through the elements within a tile, okay? So you're going to go through a smaller segment of the input in every inner loop invocation. And then you use the outer loop to move from one tile to the next tile to the next tile until you consume the entire row of the input. Make sense? Okay. So in terms of, you know, physical code, what we're going to see is, you know, this additional outer loop in line 8, where we use the M variable to move us, right, from one tile to the next tile to the next tile, right, until we have exhausted the entire width of the input array. Make sense? Well, every time we go into the next tile, we're going to have the all the threads in a block, right? All the threads in a block to cooperatively
load the input MD and ND into the shared memory.
So if you look at the left-hand side of the assignments for line 9 and line 10, you know what, the MD is going to be accessed with TY and TX, and NDS also is going to be used accessed by TY and TX.
So remember, TX, TY are the thread IDs, right? So you know what, within the block. So for a let's say 2x2 tile,
then this is going to be, you know, TX and TY are going to vary from 0, 1 in each dimension, right? So you will have 4 of those threads in the block, and each one will have a different combination of zeros and ones, right? You'll have all the 4 possible combinations in your block. And those 4 combinations will make sure that the 4 MDS elements and 4 ND elements will be loaded, but every thread is only going to need to access to load one of the MDs and one of the NDs. Are we all together on this? Make sure, you know what, if you have any question, ask. So the, you know what, the loading of MDs and NDs is only going to be done for every thread is going to. Every thread is only going to load one MDS element and one NDS element for every pass through the outer loop. Okay, through the outer loop. And how do you make sure that all the MD input and the ND inputs are loaded properly into the MDS and NDS shared memory? Well, this is the right hand side of these assignments show the address calculation. So, you know, if you look at MD, remember MD is, you know what, has these, you know, you have these tiles that you're going to go horizontally, right? You're going to actually go horizontally through that the MD row. So, you know what, for every thread, we should go back to the picture here. So every thread is effectively going to be, loading one of the elements. So every thread is going to be loading one of the elements within the row that is consuming in the MD. So if you look at the calculation, the thread with TX and TY is going to actually say, I'm going to be looking at the row that I'm responsible for, and then remember we still need to use the multiply that by width in order to skip over all the rows before that before the row that the thread is operating on, and then within the row, you're going to say, it depends on which tile I'm currently in, right? I need to skip over multiple sections of the current row until I hit the current tile that I'm working on. So depending on which tile you're working on, you need to skip over tile width element of m of those tile width elements to get to the section that you're currently accessing. And then within the section, you will be accessing the TX element of M, because you're cooperatively loading the entire section with other threads. So your X index gives you the particular element that you're responsible for. And ND is the same way. ND, we're operating from vertical direction. So we're going to start with the particular column element, right? So that we skip over enough horizontal elements to get to the column. And then we need to go vertically down. And every time we go vertically down, it depends on the particular tile. So we have n times tile width, and then plus the particular element of t But remember, we're going in the vertical direction, so the whole thing needs to be multiplied by the width because of the memory layout, right? So if you use these two expressions, every thread during every phase will be able to find the particular MD element and the ND element is responsible for, okay? And they will load it into the MDS and NDS location, right? That you designated for that element. So if you look at this piece of code, you know, all the threads, okay, you can imagine that all the threads in a thread block will be executing these two statements. Okay, so they all will be going to the global memory and get the two elements that they're responsible for. But then you're going to execute a sync thread. Okay, so this sync thread ensures that all the threads have completed loading the elements that they're responsible for, right? So that the entire tile will now be ready for use by all the threads. Okay, so you know what this ensures that before anyone tries to consume the shared memory elements, all the shared memory elements are already in place. Okay, and so you know, going back to the warp kind of consideration, unless you have a sync thread here, you may have some of the threads being scheduled way away from other threads, and you may end up in a situation where some of the threads trying to consume the shared memory elements that were loaded by those other threads that are still waiting to execute, right? So this is the one very good example of use of barrier synchronization. You know, you make sure that everyone has done its job, okay? And before you go and consume the data. Yes?
I have a question about the block IDX and thread IDX.
Yeah.
Why do you want to copy those into BX?
You don't need to. In fact, you know what? It just makes this longer. I'm just trying to make sure that it fits on the same slide.
But if it's just the same?
It should be the same. Okay?
More register, we don't need to copy that because we can save the register.
In fact, if the compiler is good enough,
it is at this point.
Yeah, you shouldn't be even using more registers. There's a technique called register coalescing. So you know what, the compiler should recognize that you're just trying to give the variable a shorter name. So you will actually use exactly that same register. Okay. So it is good enough at this point. Yeah. Oh, good. Hey, you know what? I know my
it'll do that much for you.
Friends are have been working hard. Yes.
How does the compiler do basic optimization, such as sub-expression information and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Is it up to the programmer to do that, or the compiler?
The compiler does a lot of these optimizations. Remember, all these auto variables are per thread, right? So what that means is that the compiler really doesn't have to operate on a parallel model, right? For all the auto variables, the compiler can just treat this piece of code exactly as sequential code, because no other, threads will be able to see those local variables. So you can just do any kind of traditional, common sub-expression elimination and dead code elimination, they all work.
The programmer doesn't need to spend their time doing
threat analysis, trying to do the optimization. Okay. Any other questions?
Sometimes you might need to do a little bit of tweaking because all of these optimizations, at least a lot of them, use up extra registers. So sometimes if you're trying to reduce register pressure, you might need to do seemingly random tweaks to your code to get the compiler to use fewer registers.
Yeah.
But in terms of those standard optimizations, it's reasonably competent.
Okay. Good. So now.
Question.
Oh, another question? Yes.
Great. Can we move the last line, the PD, the store to PD,
mm-hmm.
out from the outer loop?
Because you only need to store.
Wait a little bit. I'm going to actually talk through this a little bit.
Okay.
So after the sync, you know that the shared memory locations are already filled with the elements that you need for the phase, right? So now the innermost loop essentially just loops through the shared memory array, MBS and NBS, with K, right? So this essentially just take the shared memory and then you know do that small traversal in the shared memory, okay? And after, so this loop, line 11 and 12 is really the innermost loop, okay?
I'm fixing the slides now.
Because?
Well,
oh, the indentation is wrong.
Yeah, the indentation could be clearer.
So p-value needs to be indented, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, you know what, after the inner loop, you would have a sync thread, okay? So this is what Wally, I think that this is what Wally was asking. There needs to be two sync threads, okay? The second sync thread is such that you make sure that everyone who wants to consume the data have done so, okay, has done so. Because you don't want to pull the blanket, the carpet from underneath them. If they still need to consume the data, you don't want to override that data. And so you do a sync thread and make sure that all the threads in a block have already consumed the contents of MBS and NDS, okay? And before you loop back and load the next tile, okay? Remember, the next tile is going to go right into the shared memory, right? And it's going to overwrite the previous tile. Okay, so you have to make sure that all the threads who need to consume elements from the previous tile have already done so. And for those of you who are computer science or ECE students, this is to enforce the anti-dependencies, okay? You don't want to write into a variable before all the previous uses of the variables have been, you know what, satisfied. So you do the same threads and make sure that everyone has consumed the data, and then you loop back to the next tile, and then you just continue to do so until you finish with all the tiles. Yes?
And line 13 should just be a normal sync thread, even though it's capitalized differently and there's no underscore?
Yes,
I'm
exactly.
Fixing that as
that
well.
Can you fix that right away?
Yep.
So I don't forget. Yeah, it should be underscore sync thread. Yes.
The very last one.
Yep.
You write it to PD.
Yes.
Should that be a plus equals or?
No. So this goes back to the question. The question is, you know, how about the last line? So the last line should be used only after the entire loop is done. And if you look at line 12, that's where the accumulation is. So p-value here, okay, the p-value is not reinitialized every time you go to the next tile. So the p-value will actually remain an accumulation all the way through all the segments, okay? And so you know what, when you enter each segment, the p-value will be the partial accumulation of all the previous segments, right? So this register variable will actually accumulate the entire row.
So each thread computing one value needs to?
Exactly, yeah. It's still a compute just one p-value. It's just that it's done in a segmented way.
Could you break it up so you don't have this outer loop? Instead, you have all these phases going on.
You could. What he's asking is this. You know what, if you think about it, the way we're going through these segments, right, there's no fundamental reason why we cannot actually do all the segments in parallel, and then in the end, we do some kind of, you know what, a summary, right? That's essentially a map reduce, pattern, and we're going to come back to this. And it's entirely possible. But you also need to be careful about some of these numerical properties. But for the purpose of this piece of code, if you have enough parallelism, you know, let's say if your matrix dimensions are big enough, you may have enough parallelism that you don't need to get to that, you know, resort to that level of parallelism. But if you don't have enough, you may as well think about that. That's exactly right. But in that case, you need to begin to think about how to craft a different kernel, because the kernel now needs to have another dimension where you have these different segments that are also in the parallelism. You know, you need to invoke the kernel configuration so that the level of parallelism across the sections will become part of the kernel invocation. Make sense? Yes. Yeah.
So each thread is loading one element from each of these maps.
Yes.
Shared memory.
Yes.
In how far is that really happening in parallel? Can the device actually execute so many memory steps at really the same time, or are they actually being queued up somehow?
Yes.
Could it be faster to have one thread fetch the whole block?
So you're asking a very, very good question, okay? The answer is somewhere in the middle, okay? It will actually perform a huge number of these accesses in parallel, okay? In particular, if you look at this, if you look at MD, okay? And you know what, I'm jumping ahead just a little bit, so I'm not going to dwell on it for too long, but I'm going to give you a little bit of pointer here. If you look at MD, and you know what, if the thread X thread ID, you know what, all the X thread IDs within that the warp will have consecutive numbers, okay? So if TX is used as a scalar in the index of the matrix here, right? So what that means is that all the threads within a warp will be accessing consecutive locations in the MD, okay? And what that means is that all those accesses to consecutive locations in the matrix will be actually done truly in parallel. Okay, it will actually be combined into a big memory access, and it will bring in all the data elements at the same time. This is actually one of the features of these GPUs, where if all the threads in a warp access consecutive locations, they will be combined into a very effective single memory transaction, and effectively effectively performing all these multiple accesses in parallel. Okay. That's all figured out at runtime. Okay. And that does not require explicit programmer management.
That's hardware.
What's that?
Is that hardware?
It's hardware implementation. So you know what? So you know what? This is why when Wally asked, you know what, the sheer memory loading is done explicit by the programmer, and the answer is yes. Okay. However, are all these, you know, parallel, execution of all these memory loads done explicitly by the programmer? The answer is no. Okay. However, you can arrange your access patterns to better facilitate the runtime hardware decision. Okay. And we're going to come back to this point. So for those of you who did not fully follow this conversation, it doesn't matter at this point, because we are going to come back to to this concept of memory coalescing, and you know how you can best get the a large number of these memory accesses to truly go in parallel on this chip. Okay. Any other questions? Rick?
You didn't do my last question. I think the stored PD can be moved out of the loop.
It is out of the loop.
It isn't.
14 is a closed bracket.
Yeah. So this is just a simple.
For the outer, even outer loop, the M loop.
Right, right. It is outside the outer. It's intended to be outside the M loop.
From this side.
This is the close of the outer loop.
It is a close of. Okay, fine.
Right. Because there's no parenthesis for the inner loop.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's why, you know, what John was saying, that, you know, he's going to fix the slide, because the way we did this here, you know, if we indented it, it should be clear that the innermost loop did not have any parentheses. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this parenthesis in the line 14 is really the close out the outer loop. Okay, so back to the other question, we're going to actually, you know what, we have the p value, which is a register variable, right? The p value is going to accumulate through all the segments, okay? It's going to just keep accumulating. And then at the very end, after you finish with all the segments, you will be writing the p value into the p element that you're working on, right? Okay? So are we all clear? Yes?
Would you mind being the same tile in a proximal toolbox? Okay? Because you can't share both the same NGS tile and the NGS tile in a single box.
Yes. You know what? That's a very good plan. Okay. I think this is what you're asking. I'm going to repeat that question. Okay. The question is, you're still going to potentially read the same block multiple times, okay? And which is exactly right. So the reason is this. So you know what? When we produce, you know what, the PD tile in slide, I don't even know which slide it is. You know what? For those of you who listen to the recording, I went back to the green matrix picture here. So, you know what, we have a, you know what, when we produce, let's say when we produce the neighboring tile of PD, let's say to the left-hand side, okay, to the left-hand side of this PD I'm showing here, I'm actually going to have to read the blue and the red tiles again for the threads in that neighboring block, okay? They are also using exactly the same rows, okay, from MD, but because the shared memory can only be accessed from within the block, right, from the shared across the threads within the block, all the threads that generates the neighboring block, okay, neighboring tile, will actually have to reload the same tiles, okay. That's exactly right. That's the reason why, if you look at every M element for a, let's say, a 2x2 tile, actually go up, for a 16x16 tile, you should be, every element should be used 16x16 times. But whenever we load that into shared memory, we only reuse them 16 times, not 16x16 times. Okay, that's where the discrepancy comes from. Okay, because you will end up loading every tile 16 times still. Make sense? Good. Okay, so so this is going to be the basis of your MP2, right? The tile matrix multiplication. Okay, so you know what? Make sure that you really have a very clear, you know what, intuitive mental model before you go into coding. The code is really not a whole lot different, right? If you look at the number of lines that really have to be changed from your first MP, it's really not a whole lot. So, you know, this is the point I'm going to emphasize again and again. You know, in a lot of times, you know, parallel programming is not going to, you know, when you have very high performance parallel programming versus, you know, low performance parallel programming code, a lot of times the physical change to the code is not a whole lot, okay? But what's difficult is really for you to think through all the conceptual, okay, all the conceptual changes that you're making by making some of these small changes, okay? And you're really injecting a concept which is tiling, you know, sort of the tiling algorithm here, which requires you to, you know, really be able to articulate, you know, how the reuse pattern works and how the synchronization works. Otherwise, if you make a small change where you have a bug, it's almost impossible to debug, right? And that's where the difficulty of parallel programming comes in. Okay. Now, when you invoke the kernel, you know what, you're still going to be invoking the kernel the same way. You know what, you're still going to have the same threading structure. You know what, you're going to have, for each block, you're going to have tile width by tile width threads, right? And you're going to, you know what, you're going to generate width divided by tile times width divided by tile with number of blocks. So the kernel invocation still remains the same. So let's kind of talk about some of the higher level considerations once we all understand that code, okay? So you know, let's kind of argue through this a little bit. We have these threading models, right? So every thread block should have a lot of threads. So if we choose the tile size of 16 by 16, let's say, you know what, we would have 256 threads. And remember, you know what, at the end of the threading model lecture, this was a pretty good pick, right? It was a good pick in the sense that, you know, you end up with three blocks in a SAM, in a streaming multiprocessor, and you end up with 760 threads that fully utilize all the thread space in every shared memory multiprocessor. So that was a pretty good pick as far as the threading model is concerned. And you know what, you should have a lot of thread blocks. So if we have a 1K by 1K matrix multiplication, that gives you 1K divided by 16, which is 64 on each side, you'll have 64 by 64 thread blocks in your in your kernel. And that would that gives you pretty good number of thread blocks that you can kind of assign into shared memory and load balance. Now, if you have 16, that also gives SAM each SAM three blocks, and that's 768 threads. That's a full capacity as we mentioned before. So if you relate this pick to the memories, then you can you start to see that every thread block will perform 2 times 256 floating point loads. Okay, why? Remember, we're going to load, we're going to load one tile of M and one tile of N, right? And each tile of M is going to be 16 elements by 16 elements, right? That's 256 loads. And we need to also do that for N. So in order to do one phase of that, one phase iteration of the outer loop, or just one phase of that the kernel, we're going to have to do 512 loads, right, from the MD and the ND. However, once we loaded these 512 MD and ND elements, we're going to do 256 times 2 times 16 multiplies and adds. Okay? Why? Because every thread is going to be doing a small section of the inner product, right? So the inner product is going to take 16 elements from M and 16 elements from N. Okay? And we're going to do multiply and add to each pair. So that gives us the 2 times 16 in each thread, right? But we're going to have 16 by 16 threads in that block. So there are 256 of these threads. Each one is going to be doing 32 operations. So in each phase, we're going to actually be doing 8,192 operations. And this means that for every 512 loads, we're going to be doing more than 8,000 floating point operations, okay? And this is why the code is going to be a whole lot more efficient, okay, than the previous version. Because the previous version gives us almost a one-to-one ratio. Remember, in that loop, you're going to be doing two loads, and then you're going to do two operations. By sharing the data element across 16 threads, right? We reduce the need for memory access by 16 times, not the ratio of memory operation versus the floating point operation has reduced by 16 times, okay? And this gets you a lot more efficient usage. And in fact, if you go back and look at the, you know, the numbers, the memory bandwidth is no longer a limiting factor. Okay, once you reduce that ratio by about 16 times, it's no longer a limiting factor. Okay, other things start to, you know, to be the limiting factor. Okay, so for this simple application, you can actually do a very, very good job using Kyle algorithms. Yes.
What ratio is it where the memory stops being a limiting factor?
Okay. The way to think about it is this. You know, you have 86.4 gigabytes per second, right? And that essentially that's 21.6, I think. You know what? Loads for 4 bytes load, you know, per load, right? So you can do 21.6 gigaloads per second. In order to, you know, to fully utilize the chip, can really accomplish, you know, 364 you know, gigaflops. So you really need to have about 16 times, right?
So this is right on that limit.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, once you get onto the 16 times, you really do a very good shape. So so let's go a little bit deeper into, you know, into the shared memory, you know, of these implementations and make sure that you also understand the limitations of these things. Okay. So every streaming multiprocessor in G80 has 16K bytes of shared memory. Okay. Remember in G80 we have what? We have 16 of these share memories, right? And every one has 16 kilobytes of those share memories. Yes?
Is this 16 the magic number? If you make the ratio 16, then this is the best which you can do?
If you make it the ratio of 16, that usually means that you no longer really need to worry about the memory bandwidth. However, it's not entirely true, because if the remaining memory accesses are not coalesced, you will be underutilizing the 21.6. Okay, so you can still get into trouble. But 16 is actually almost like the threshold where you get into, you know, these other, you can start to tune other parameters.
The other thing to note too is that what we're evaluating here is fundamental algorithmic limitations, but there's a lot of instruction overhead for things like addressing and things like this. So
next time, though.
Yeah.
So that's the topic of the next lecture. Yes.
So I think loading the elements in an array is not coalesced, right?
Actually, it is.
It is?
Yes.
But they are not consecutive.
We'll come back to this point. Since you ask, go and figure out. Okay, but we will be talking about it in a few lectures. Yes.
When you compute that memory access ratio, shouldn't you like also consider the fact that you're putting something in memory back?
Yes. What you're saying is the memory bandwidth is, you know, should also include the writes into the memory, right? Absolutely. But for this particular case, the write to read ratio is so small. Right, you know, it's really for the entire width, right, of M reads, you're going to eventually do a single key write, right? So, you know, for large matrices, that ratio is like 1 to 1,000 or more, right? So you know, that's why we didn't calculate it. But in general, yes, you will need to also add the stores. Okay, we're just, especially when the loads and stores are more balanced in some algorithms, absolutely. Okay, all good questions. And so the shared memory size is implementation dependent. Okay, and this is very important to remember. When you write your algorithm you know, you should be somewhat aware that in the GAD generation is 16K bytes so that you don't overuse the resources. But you also need to keep in mind that, you know, the size could actually increase in what in the future. And for tile width of 16, each thread block will use, you know, 16 by 16, which is 256. And then each element is 4 bytes. So that's why you have 256 times 4 bytes. And then M and N, each one will take up one part. So that's the 2. Okay, 2 for M and N, 256 for 16 by 16, and 4 bytes for each element. So in order to use the tiled algorithm, every thread block of 16 by 16 tiles will have to use 2K bytes of shared memory. And obviously, if you use smaller tiles, you will use smaller amount of shared memory. If you use bigger tiles, you will use bigger amount of shared memory, right? So when you increase the tile size, there is a danger that you may increase the tile size to the level where you can not even accommodate one block, okay, with your shared memory that you have. So if you use something like 32 by 32, actually 32 by 32 may be still okay, 60 by 64, you will definitely exceed the amount of shared memory you have even with one block, okay? And that then bad things start to happen, okay? And the shared memory can potentially have up to eight thread blocks, given a 16 by 16 configuration, right? So because everyone needs 2K bytes, right? And you have up to 16K bytes available. So from sheer memory point of view, you can accommodate up to 8 thread blocks. However, in this case, 3 of the thread blocks will give you a full 768 threads. So you will not ever reach the 8 thread block for a 16 by 16 configuration. So this is a very good example of multiple limitations, and whichever limitation you hit first will limit the numbers, okay? So basically, in this particular case, as far as the sheer memory capacity is concerned, it's not a limiting factor, okay? You're limited by the number of thread slots that you can have, right? In the in the streaming multiprocessors. So what that also means is that you do have room to try to use even more shared memory per thread block. And that's the reason why sometimes people will actually calculate 2 elements or 4 elements per thread. Okay, and we're going to actually go into that discussion in the next couple of lectures. But I wanted to point out that oftentimes, when you try to get more performance, you look at what's limiting you. In this case, once you hit 16 by 16, you know, your threading slots are going to limit you. So, but you still have some shared memory that you can have, additional shared memory you can play with. So oftentimes, people will try to actually calculate 2 PD elements per thread, and therefore loading 2 tiles, okay, with each thread, you know, with each threading block. And that's kind of, you know, I wanted to put a forward pointer to the lecture. And the next tile width is 32, but it would create, you know, it would actually use, 8K bytes of shared memory. And 8K bytes is still good. You can still accommodate 2 thread blocks as far as the shared memory is concerned. But 32 by 32 already exceeded, the maximal block thread block size, which is 512, okay? So you won't be able to get there anyway. Using 16 by 16 tiling, we reduce access to global memory access by 16, and as we discussed before, you know what, we can actually start to support the peak execution bandwidth once we get there. So, looking through this, this piece of code, we see some interesting, we make some interesting observations. And what I would like you to do is
to use a small, like say 4x4 matrix, take then maybe you know use the 2x2 tile and just kind of work through the ends and the ends and the inner loop, so that when you go home, make sure that you really understand, you know, how the CUDA runtime execution dynamics can work. Okay. Now, if you go and measure, okay, the execution speed of that piece of code, you can just vary, 4x4, 8x8, 16x16, and you will actually begin to see the performance. Okay, you should be able to measure the performance improve by increasing the tile size. Okay, and you know what? Basically, if you don't tile, okay, and then you do a 4x4 tile, you actually reduce the performance. Okay, and why is that? Because in a 4x4 tile, you're still going to be totally limited by your memory bandwidth. Okay, by reducing the memory bandwidth by 4, you're still in the memory limitation situation. But remember, you added another level of loop, right? Now you're doing a two-level loop. There's overhead. Okay, this is what John was talking about. You actually can add some overhead by changing the code structure into a two-level loop, right? So you pay a little bit of overhead, so you can actually reduce your performance by a 4x4. So this is something that a lot of people actually don't understand. When they try to improve the performance of their code, they say, okay, let me try some tiling. Okay, I didn't finish EC498, but I remember one of my friends mentioned that Professor Hu talked about tiling. So I'm smart. Okay, so I'm going to just do tiling. So they did a 4x4 tile and then run the code. Oops, it's a little slower, right? Oh boy, tiling doesn't work, right? It's all nonsense. Never use tiling again, right? So on the other hand, what the person didn't realize is until you really have a good conceptual understanding of these underlying models, those numbers, whether it's 4x4 or 16x16, it means a whole lot, right? But without understanding what's really underneath it, it's hard to realize that 4x4 is just not good enough. And then you do 8x8, and this is where you cut down enough of the memory bandwidth, okay, to really overcome the additional loop overhead. Okay, and so now you start to see some benefit. And 12x12 is actually is also possible. It doesn't have to be 2 to the power, and you can actually see that it's further improved. And then 16x16, and once you get into 16x16, you actually get out of the memory limitation. And this is what John was saying when he added to my comment. But at this point, you're still not quite at something like 346. And that's not because you're limited by memory. You're actually limited by some of these other factors. So if you start to do some optimization in these other dimensions, such as loop and rolling, and we're going to talk about that in the next lecture or so, then you will see performance improvement. Okay. However, if you apply this loop and rolling optimization to some of the previous versions of the code, it doesn't get you anything because the memory accesses are limiting you. And if you do those optimizations, you're not going to see any benefit at all. Okay. And this is a classic concept of bottlenecks. Okay. You have all these limitations, and the worst one will limit. And when you go and work on these other things and try to make things better, nothing will matter, okay, until you relieve the worst bottleneck in your system. Okay. Yes?
I mean, wouldn't the compiler do this?
Yeah.
You do the tiling,
but
also you have to do the unrolling and all this?
It's actually getting better. The new compiler is not doing unrolling better. The first version didn't do unrolling, and the second version not does better. So more and more of these things will be incorporated, but a lot of these things are still not quite there yet.
You still need to use some pragmas to tell it, give it hints about where it ought to unroll, but it's less work.
Yeah, it's much, it should be much better than 2 years ago. Okay, now, just to summarize, you know, at this point, you know what, we have covered the concept of, you know what, putting together a physical CUDA program actually get some reasonable performance, okay, for a simple, you know, code like matrix multiplication. And you know what, we talk about, you know what, the global the variable declarations, right? So you know what, if you look at the code outside the functions, you should see some global variable declarations such as the host variables, such as the device global constant and texture variables. And those are the variables that, you know, will be accessible by the host. And you know what, they're also shared across, you know, multiple kernels, okay? And then you have, you know, the function prototypes, you know, you have global, you know, you have these kernel function prototypes, you know, in front of the main function. And then you have the main function. The main function is really kind of a surrogate or it's a kind of a, you know, a generic term for any of the host function that will be calling devices, okay? And so, you know, in the host code, you're going to see allocate memory space on device like CUDA malloc. You'll be transferring data from host to device. And then, you know, you will set up the kernel configuration, right? Set up the threading structure. And then you will go and invoke kernel, okay? And once you finish finish with kernel, you will transfer result from device to host. And then you can, you know, even check some, you know, check some error condition and, you know, do some comparison and make sure that, you know, we all did the right things. If you look at the physical code actually is going to look a little bit ugly because oftentimes you need to check error condition right after the kernel invocation, you know, and you need to surround it with some of these, you know, checking and so on. And, you know, you should be able to see that in the example code. Then you will be followed with, you know, by some kernel code, and the kernel will have, you know, within the kernel you have variable declarations such as the local variable, you know, the shared variables, automatic variables, and so on, and you will see the sync threads, __, of course. And then you will have other functions such as the floating point functions and so on that can be executed either on host or device or both, right? So if you, you know what, the kind of, you know, code that you're going to be writing for the multiple MPs will pretty much all look like, you know, this kind of layout. So, you know, you should feel pretty comfortable when you go and look at the example code and then start to craft your own. John, any addition? I think this is the last slide before they go and do the matrix multiplication.
I don't think so.
Okay, so perfect timing. And you know what, if you have any other question, you know what, make sure you use Webboard. You know what, my whiteboard is really the best place for everyone else to help you, including John and I, okay?